Now, if like me, you watch your children still fighting over who gets the front seat of the car and they're now in their teens, or you see your relatives trying and failing to have a meal together without someone threatening someone else, you may think that sharing and working together isn't really ingrained. Well, my next guest has some news for both you and I. He says humans do share better than anyone, any other species, that is. Not only that, but according to him, the way we humans share is so important, he believes the moment our ancestors first learnt to share was the moment we became the humans we are today. Dr. Simon Angus is a senior lecturer at the Monash University Business School in Melbourne. Simon, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to share this time with you.
It is indeed.
Now, how do you define sharing and collaboration?
Yeah, so in our thinking, it's more perhaps than a basic idea of I've got some lunch. I notice you don't have some. Would you like some of my lunch? In this case, we're thinking about more the collaboration side, where we're really engaging in teamwork in a moment in time where it goes beyond I'm doing this and you're doing this to we're doing this together.
Right,
and that's quite crucial, and that's the thing that's quite unusual for us as human species, those of us who work in the field talk to us about. And there's been some really interesting work lately to try and tease that out between animals, particularly chimps and apes, our most related neighbours, and us. And so it's that fascinating thing that I think it's hard for us to pin down because it happens so often.
Yeah. We take it for granted.
We suddenly realise, we don't even realise, but occasionally we do. For example, I have got a colleague who dances. He says, I can dance 5 hours a night, Simon. I love it so much. Economists, we are lighter than perhaps some may think. He does the salsa. And I talked to him about it just last night. And I said, what is it about it that you really love? And he said, well, there's dancing and so on. And often you meet people you haven't met before. But what's really interesting, and he says, when it gets really good, is when I suggest a move just through some subtle kind of motions as he dances with a lady. And he says, and when we carry it off, when we do it, he says, what's amazing is we did it together. There's this shared look in the eye, the idea that there was no longer an I'm dancing with you,
yes.
We're dancing together. And that's a real buzz. And as you said in your intro, children, I know that they fight sometimes. I have three of my own. But you can see they love doing things with other people, particularly other kids, but also their parents, sometimes to our...
chagrin.
Chagrin, that's right.
Yes.
Banal things that seem to have lost interest, perhaps individually for them and us, but there's still something that keeps them going. They still want to do it together. There's this we're doing this together that really captivates them.
Those scenarios you just exemplified there ring bells, I'm sure, for all of us. And I'm just wondering, though, when you compare the way we behave in terms of sharing and collaboration with chimpanzees, what did you discover?
Well, we have worked on a mechanism for how this ability to do this kind of we intentional, we are doing it together, has come about and become widespread in the population. There's been some beautiful work recently done by others. Michael Tomasello at the Max Planck Institute in Germany has been working with chimps since about 2007. I guess the question many people have is, well, I've seen my dogs perhaps seem to be cuddly and touchy-friendly. I've seen maybe documentaries on how...
Well, let's get stuck into this. I was holding my fire in this, but now
sure. You
mentioned it, I want to get into it because, I mean, I was raised on David Attenborough and I hold him in great esteem. And there's many occasions where he has illustrated very visually through the amazing documentaries he's made with his team that, for example, the wild dogs of Africa will collaborate and move as a coordinated whole between each other, communicating using calls and seeing each other in the field of play as they run down prey. And yet you're telling me that only humans can do this.
Yeah, that's this is work done by others that we build on. But I think
killer whales, another example.
Yeah, so they might communicate and so on.
Yes.
The question is, have they moved beyond I'm taking a role? And I'm doing this because perhaps I turned up fifth or sixth in the line when we went to hunt this prey, and that's the role I take in this situation. And they move beyond that, and you're doing that role and so on, to we are hunting this prey together. And that's something going on in their mind, something about how they perhaps represent that situation. And in philosophical literature and the way that we think about collaboration, there's probably three key things that we need to see happening. And it's obviously dealing with animals. It's kind of like young children. One friend of mine said it's kind of like veterinary science a lot of the time. You can't just ask them what's hurting or what's wrong. You've got to try and set up experiments to work out what it is that might be going on, or tests and so on. The three things are really these. One is that there should be some sort of idea that they are part of a team and that they're committed to that team.
Yes.
Secondly, that they understand their role and understand the roles of others to the extent that they could take on another individual's role if that's not being done adequately, or they get injured or fall away or something like that. And third,
sometimes not even humans can do that.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah, we
work in the public service, you know.
Simon. I understand.
Yes.
And the third is that they would help each other. So there's an active understanding, not only that you've got a role, I've got a role, but I'm going to help you. What's that? What's important about that is that that indicates such a commitment to the shared output, to the product, if you like, of our collaborative work, that I'm actually going to reach across and try and help you because I know it's important to the collective effort. Now, I know and I understand that there is, you know, observationally, it would appear that this is going on in some cases.
Where there is a shared goal of preying upon an animal that they can feast on later.
That's right. Unfortunately, however, collaboration is so innate amongst us that we look at these scenes and go, oh, that's teamwork, that's collaboration, and so on.
Okay.
I think we need to be careful doing that. That's not necessarily my claim, but it's the claim of others. And basically, the way into this scientifically is to say, well, rather than observing, if you like, a field experiment or some documentary footage, which we can marvel at that, and it is amazing when we see this occurring and this sort of understanding amongst them.
Mm.
But to try and tease out exactly perhaps what they're thinking cognitively, what's going on, what is the representation they have in their mind of what they're actually doing? Are they just an eye taking part in a moment in time, or are they actually moved beyond that to this we moment, that we are doing it together?
I reckon you're probably right in saying that they probably don't have the sort of cognitive abilities to even be reflecting in the way we are about their behaviour, clearly.
Yeah,
it might be primal instinct that's pushing and pulling at that animal's behaviour, but they're often in packs. There is an instinct that the community of the pack has to survive at all costs, which isn't part of what you're talking about too, isn't it?
Well, yes, and that, I guess, leads into the way scientifically we'd investigate this question, because what's going on in the field, it makes lovely footage, but we don't have a lot of control over the situation.
No.
When we do science, we like to have control so that we can test a certain mechanism or theory and be relatively sure that there aren't other outside influences that might be confounding our results, mixing them up, so we can't determine between theory A or theory B.
So in the case of chimps...
Yes, so the way forward is, I think, a good one. This is what Michael Tomasello and others do, is basically say, well, let's go to the most related animal we know of to humankind,
yeah,
and let's put them in situations where we think that they would demonstrate some or one of or other of these kind of core three aspects of collaborative behaviour, and let's see how they go. And let's do it as well with infants, so human infants, 12 months, 18 months, who are kind of prelingual. We couldn't say that they've learnt a whole lot. There hasn't been a great deal of verbal teaching and verbalising and so on. Let's see if they've got even something more than a relatively mature chimp. So, for example, one of the experiments is just to say, well, what is it that the chimp thinks that another individual sees when they see?
Okay.
And so an experiment is that, it's quite funny, get the chimp to beg or appeal for food from an experimenter. And in this case, we can't get chimps to kind of one of them to role play the experimenter and one of them to role play because that's a little difficult. So instead, what you have to do is find a handler who is as common as a kind of
familiar with the baby
that's
chimp.
Right,
yeah, right.
As possible, so that it's not the same, but it's as if it's kind of like a friend chimp.
There's a history
along.
Of dynamics between
that's
the
right.
two. Yeah.
And basically, if you get a chimp to sort of appeal or beg for food from a human experimenter, that's all well and good when they're facing them and so on. But then if you put things like a blindfold on the experimenter's eyes, or you put a bucket on their head, or you turn them away from the chimp,
yeah,
the chimp does exactly the same gestures as they did when the experimenter was faced towards them and unblindfolded with no bucket on their head.
And what does that tell us?
The inference, I think, is that this, and there's a whole number of other experiments, we might get to a couple more, one of them there is that it seems that they can't imagine, they can't, what one author calls mirroring. They can't imagine what it's like to be on the other side and see from the experimenter's perspective what's going on.
And yet a young human child can.
That's right. They, as you'd imagine, my kids, if they see that I'm turned away from them, they continue screaming, or the screaming gets louder until I turn towards them. They have my attention, and then we can, you know, I can try and work out what's going on. Another example is
that's attention-seeking behaviour. How is that illustrating sharing and collaboration?
Well, what's important is it goes to the question of, does the chimp have the ability to see from another individual's role? So if I can't in a team situation understand your role from your perspective,
yeah,
it's going to be really hard for us to collaborate, because I don't exactly understand how I could even take on your role or what your role looks like so that I can help you and so on. And that's one of those fundamental aspects of teamwork, that we can kind of take mentally other people's roles and understand what we're all trying to achieve together and how we fit into the larger scheme.
So I want to play devil's advocate you until the cows come home, but time is approaching.
Yes.
So what I do need to ask is, if you're going forward with this theory that only humans can have this kind of higher level sense of self to allow collaboration and sharing, now that you've arrived at that summation, what do you do with the information?
Well, this ties into a larger question, which is really, What is it that is unique about humans and our intelligence? I mean, we have agglomerations of cities and villages. We have cities, we have symphony orchestras, we have radio programs, we play majestic sport, we dance, we have institutions of government. There is something fundamentally different. And so a question that has possessed many people is, how is that so? The original one of the original hypotheses was basically that it was kind of like an arms race for cognition. So the smarter individual would outsmart a less smart individual.
Because you tend to survive longer.
Yeah, that's right. And would evolutionary speaking, you would eventually accumulate that smartness in a wider population.
Yeah.
There's an alternate hypothesis from around 40 years ago, which suggests actually, no, maybe the key thing that predates even that kind of smarts is this collaborative ability, this social aspect to learning. And the reason for that is that if I'm able to nail this collaboration stuff as an individual, even at a simple level, then things like teaching and learning and doing things together for a common goal all become much easier, and therefore further learning and further understanding actually becomes kind of on an accelerant, and which means that there's sort of, I guess you could contrast the ideas as, is it that we're smart and therefore we are able to collaborate, or is it that we learnt to collaborate and then that actually leads to this higher intelligence?
You could argue it's symbiotic. You could say that one influences the other.
Yep.
And would it be also fair enough to say that some of the issues that challenge us in terms of education around the world in a modern globe are that we've perhaps disconnected the sense of collaboration from the way knowledge is imparted?
Yeah, that could be, although there is a real push these days in classrooms that I'm working in to have more and more, they call it active learning. In
fact,
I just spent 2 days at a workshop with my university down at Cape Schanck working on how to increase the amount of active learning, which is effectively saying, how do we get students to work exploratively with others to try and learn more. So I think we're onto that now, that is this social aspect is probably being refound. And the idea of almost like a cinema where it's like the teacher and I sit in the seats and I don't want anyone crackling the popcorn next to me is out. And the idea is I need to be able to understand and see others and really feel like I'm part of a shared learning moment. And so collaboration, again, pipes up, it's natural for us, and we have that kind of aha moment, but we have it together, and it's awesome when that occurs. And that's what lecturers, you know, hope for when we see that occurring, which is, I'm a great, you know, advocate for the lecture, if there's something special going on and so on because of this reason. So going back to the question then becomes, well, if it's collaboration first, and this is really where our recent research starts from, how did collaboration come about? Because if it's not a case of working out how the arms race worked in terms of cognition, well, how did the initial, if you like, pre-intelligence collaboration get going in the population? And it's not a case of whether it was there or not. It's how did it become so widespread that it's just common? It's just part of humanity. We expect, I walk up to you, you've got a broken down car, you've got a tire that maybe needs fixing, and I know that you'll understand that I come up and start helping you. And before we know it, part of a we activity. We're doing this together. And that's
well,
just...
Well, in that case, you're actually... I've paid for you to turn up because you'll be the RACV. But can I also say, because we had to finish, but can we? I also say that perhaps one of the reasons why we have learned in the early generations of our ascendancy as a species to collaborate is we've watched animals. Can I dare say that?
You can dare say that.
You may not agree.
Not my area. It's up to you. Yeah, you can have that opinion for sure. Yeah.
And that very point, I'll have to say farewell. But Simon, it's been a really interesting conversation, and hopefully people listening can also throw their two cents in. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Dr. Simon Angus, who's a senior lecturer at Monash University Business School, and Simon will be taking part in a Future Tense program still to come in the future about collaboration.